Alright, here we go. It gives me a great pleasure to introduce Billy for 38 years.
My name is Billy, I'm an alcoholic. It's probably really strange for those of you that know me to see me walk up here with two books. But I brought up Dr. Bob and the good old timers because I want to reference Dr. Bob a little later on in my share. And welcome Sam and anyone that's relatively new in sobriety, just getting your feet on the ground here. What we do here is good to see you. I guess I better lead off saying I had some brain damage while I was out there, and I guess based out I'll come back to it. It's really good to see a whole bunch of you. And in addition to getting our feet on the ground here, we begin to put roots in the soil of our life. Like my life is like we have 40 acres, and we could just just turn on the heat and turn up the wind and just blow it all away, or we can embrace what it takes and do what it takes and put roots down and grow. And by God's grace, when I was 26, I got here and I was here for 6 or 8 weeks in a recovery house, had a drunk driving, and got a job while I was in the recovery house. I'd been living in my car, so of course being in a recovery house was a really good idea. And I got a job, and the 4th of July came up, and the whole house went out to the AA picnic, and I went to the company picnic. And I knew a couple of beers wouldn't hurt me then, because I hadn't drank nothing for 6 or 8 weeks, right? And 9 years went by before I got back here. I just washed up on the shores here. So the picture's worth 1,000 words. Most of you have on the card. If you don't have it, I have them for you. And that's the old days. And that's old days, not D-A-Y, but D-A-D-D days. Appeared in this great house and telling the whole story. And on the day I was born, I had 4 sisters. By the time I was 6 years old, I had 8 sisters. And the brother came along when I was 8 years old. And it saved my life from the race. And the ratio of 8-1 is quite a challenge. And, anyhow, so for the newcomers especially, I don't want to chase you out of here by referencing God or Christ or Jesus or Catholicism or Christianity or Holy Spirit. Let's get to see what else goes here. Because we can say a higher power. We can say great spirit. We can say the source. We can say creator. We can say one who has all power. Or we can just say, the higher self or the larger mind. Whatever language you would like to use, we invite you to use your language, your internal language. But we highly recommend you have some language going on with a power greater than yourself, because it's going to be a rough road until you do. Otherwise, it's all based on my own self, my own interest, my own power. And what we're going through life on, we all got here based on our own power. And so with that said, having said those words, now I don't have to worry about anyone running out of the room. There was a big Catholic family that I was born into. And as a child, I had an unbreakable, unshakable love of God. And I my vision was when I grew up, I would be able to express that and to invite people to embrace life on a level that maybe they're not embracing it. And it's a trip that it took alcoholism to get me to that place that I'm walking in the shoes of the man that I thought I would be when I was a child. One of the best things I have to say about Catholicism is that I exist. If my parents were Protestant, there was Susan and Claudia. But as it happened, after Claudia came 1.5 years later, and 2.5 years later, Sheila And she was the first of seven of us that were born over 9.5 years. So this is an avalanche of us that live because of Catholicism. And I'm sure there's other people in the room who have a similar story. I'm not promoting Catholicism. I don't practice Catholicism right now. I'm a writer at heart, and someday I feel called to put into writing a much simpler approach to our higher power. Something that just takes all the barriers out of the way. When I got to, I might tell part of my story, but I want to get this other stuff told first. So So I graduated high school, top SAT score, and student body president, and I was going to marry my high school sweetheart, make babies, and figure out life as I go along. And to my surprise, this shows what a good listener I am, or a good communicator, to my surprise, in the middle of the summer, she tells me she's going to Florida State University. I graduated Bishop High in Santa Barbara. She's going to Florida State. She wants to be a teacher. And she was off to the university. Meanwhile, I was just stumbling forward in life. And despite having the ability to test really well, I can understand a lot of details. But as far as making plans go, like planning to go to college or planning to do this, planning to that, that's not my strong suit. But anyhow, so it was 1967 and the Vietnam War was going on. I went to City College in Santa Barbara, and I always remember in the fall semester on the wall in the cafeteria, there was a banner all the way across the cafeteria that said, of all sad things of 2010, the saddest are what might have been. And I was looking at it the other day, and it was like, I might have, like, a total blew my life out of the water from drinking and using and stuff. And in the course of my alcoholism, I got into psychedelics for a bit, not a long time, but there was one time it was really bad, and I just fried my brain. I could feel it like scrambled eggs in a frying pan. And but maybe it took that to erase my way of life. Growing up, like for my emotional response to life growing up, I would be sad about something or angry about something. And one of my sisters would say, don't be sad or don't be angry. And then they'd entertain me, they'd make me laugh or something. And so I never experienced my emotions. And not a whole lot. And I'm not sure where that came from, but anyhow, in my alcoholism, I got really going after high school. I saw my high school sweetheart in Florida in December, Christmas time, for 2 weeks, and it was just so good to see her. And 3 months later, I'd begun indulging in alcohol in a more consistent way in January. Her birthday was in March. And she had written about she wanted to join a sorority. And I figured she joins a sorority, she's going to lose interest in me, and she's going to meet someone from a fraternity, and that'll be the end of it. Anyhow, I got on the phone with her in March on her birthday, and I chewed her out. And fast forward, everyone was getting drafted to go to Vietnam. I had my physical, I was classified 1A. I got a telegram from the Marine Corps that said, you're going to get drafted on Monday for joining the Marines now. And that was on a Friday. So Monday I went into the post office for the Selective Service and applied to conscientious objectors. And it took a couple of years to get it. And when I got it, by the time I got it, they had started the draft lottery, and they dropped it to 195, and now it's 199. And if I'd been drafted, I would have had alternative service, and it would have been a different story. And who knows what, but it's what it is. So anyhow, fast forward to the recovery house in 6 or 8 weeks and casting my sobriety, and then fast forward to, I'm just stumbling through life, stumbling ahead, and I met a woman that I was like so in love with, she was married and separated. I'd met her husband to be a, her dad, her mom, her stepdad, she was back off from each other for what I thought would be a few months, but she's going through what she's going through. And I got a drunk driving on like January 19th, 1983. And the first thing that crossed my mind when I got pulled over was, what's Laura going to think? And 5 days later, I found out that she had found her car and been washed off the road in a storm, and she was gone. And all my thinking, all my vision was, you know, call her on her birthday in February and try to touch base. And that was gone. So anyhow, over the next 20 months, I mean, my alcoholism just progressed, but I wasn't like, you know, careening through people's lives. I wasn't totally animated, or I wasn't an adrenaline addict and so on. And, but I wouldn't square off drinking every morning, and I'd get started later in the day every day. And once I got started drinking, I kept on going. And that's the most important thing to know for me about my alcoholism, because without that, if I just have a drink later in the day and take the edge off and then get back to what I was doing, I wouldn't be here. You know, we're all here because of that. You know, if you have a drink, craving kicks in, you're going to go where it takes. And to me, that's a physical condition. It's like if I had 6 fingers on my hand, and as a welder, I'd have a special glove to that hand, and I'd be able to hold things in a way that other welders couldn't. You know, Billy's got this amazing hand, you know, whatever. And so on. Well, that's what my alcoholism is, my body. The reason we're all here isn't because we have that condition. I mean, that's the common denominator, but we're all here because we ignore it. We learn to ignore our condition. And it's having that condition of alcoholism, where if you have a drink of craving, it's going to kick in, and using alcohol for your emotional response to life, then it's going to lead to adverse circumstances. And it's really good to see that, that domain, but also Angel here. It's really cool. And anyhow, so, let's see. Yeah, so this condition we have leads to trouble, leads to whatever, leads to loss of motivation, leads to loss, no sense of direction in life, you know, loss of relationships, loss of connections. You know, connections to me is one of the most important words in the English language. You know, we have connections that we don't, and to the extent we make connections, that gives meaning to life. So, anyhow, so given that I have this physical condition, and I ignored it in my thinking, I would tell myself, I'm only hurting myself, I'm just going to have to, I deserve it, I don't care. Whatever I tell myself, it allows myself to have a drink, opens that box, and I go where it takes me. And that's crazy. That's insane. Okay? Which leads directly to the second step. And this is the power greater than ourselves to restore sanity. And what I just shared to you is the first step in shorthand language. You know, I have a physical condition and I ignore that, and that's insane. So when my friend drowned, I did not have the emotional or spiritual or whatever word with all it takes to contact her loved ones. They didn't, never found the body. She was, car was lost. They found the car. The roof was peeled back like a sardine can. It had gone under a bridge, and they never found her. And I didn't have it, you know, to reach out to people to share grief. Anyhow, so over the next 20 months, I swore off drinking every morning like I had been before. And I had stayed sober on my own for about 6 weeks when I was first seeing her. But anyhow, let's see. So over the next 20 months, there were different times like I should see a therapist. I needed to, you know, I couldn't share my grief. I couldn't get my grief out and so on. And so this one day, 20 months later, my mom saw the final workshop and she says, hey, we noticed you haven't been happy for a while. And we saw this therapist, maybe see this therapist. And there was something in me that said yes. And it was like a spark of life, a spark of possibilities, a spark of try something different, try to move forward, try to resolve the problem or whatever. And I called the therapist, made an appointment for the next day, and then I decided, like Ben Franklin, I was going to, you know, early to bed, early to rise, next man, healthy, wealthy, and wise. So I I finished my last couple of Camel steaks and my last couple of beers, and then went to bed about 10 o'clock and couldn't get to sleep. I went to safety and I got a pint of rum and a liter of Coca-Cola and a pack of Camel steaks. Came home and I watched some movie on the black and white TV. I had a little apple crate, you know, turned on in where my TV was, and another one next to my chair. And I watched some movie from 11 to 1, I don't know what it was, but from 1 to 3 o'clock, this movie called The Heart is the Lonely Hunter with Alan Arkin. And it's a classic kind of movie. I watched it again once since, and it's kind of depressing, but kind of uplifting in a way. And anyhow, it was 3:02 in the morning, October 2nd. And I looked up the clock, the movie was over, and there was this much left in my glass, the rum bottle was empty, and I tipped it up. And so that's my sobriety day. Like last Sunday, I celebrated a year sober, the 38th time in a row. So we did a day for all, figuring out how to do a day, how to just stay sober for a day. You know, what does it take? What's today going to take? And so on. And so I saw the therapist. And I figured I was going to not drink while I could cure my problems. And I'm sure I'll remember to get back to that. But I want to take a little aside here and indicate, in the course of my sobriety life, I have come to understand something about problems that's really important for me to share. And if you can understand it, it will serve you your whole life. And to me, it's like any problem anyone ever had, has now, or ever will have, there's one thing in common all problems have, without which it's not a problem. And that's a solution. So if there's something going on and it seems like a problem, check it out. Is there a solution? Next month there's a solution. Okay, is there a problem today? No, it's a condition today. Nothing to do about it today. There's no solution today. And so to help me compartmentalize my life, something pops into mind and it's a problem. There's a solution, but for today's purposes, it's a condition. It's just the fact of my life that I don't know if I'm going to have the rent on December 1st. I'm pretty sure I will, because what I do is in God's hands. I take care of God's business. God takes care of my business. Generally, no, not generally. God does, just period. I don't always take care of God's business. When I didn't mean God doesn't always take care of mine. Anyhow, so I throw that out there because when you see things and it seems like a problem, go to the solution. Just get the solution. If there's a straight path, there's a clear path, and all the ruminating takes up energy, it takes up time, it takes up mentality, and so on and so forth. Anyhow, so back to the first time I saw a therapist, and I can not drink while I took care of my problems, I'm pretty sure of that. So I've got to share my grief. And she asked me to see her next week, and would you come drink to see me next week? And I said, yes. So out of the clear blue, I was able to get sober for a week. Just, you know, now I've got to do one more aside. I owe my life to the traditions, okay? And especially for people who have mixed, drug and alcohol or whatever and so on and so forth. In the old days, before the traditions, it could well be you have to be a real alcoholic to attend the meeting, okay? And what the traditions did, it spelled it out in the third tradition. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking, okay? Now, I identify as an alcoholic if I have a drink of cravings when it kicked in, but I wasn't an alcoholic that woke up with shakes in the morning, or I got a hemorrhage function, or I got a drink so I can throw up, sit and drink some more. That wasn't me, okay? So every time I drank, which was every day, after I swore it off in the morning, later on in the day when I got going, I am an alcoholic, but I owe my life to the third tradition. So I said, yes, I will see you next week, and I won't drink till you see you. And the power to do that just came along with my willingness, I think, to see her in the first place. Because I could have told her, oh, no, I'm fine. And I was the liquor store a half block away from my little studio. It's like, you know, it was my own private liquor cabinet, and there was a guy earlier that kept it open for me from 7 to midnight and made sure nobody stole my booze. You know, that was my mentality. My shop was in a downtown, it wasn't a store, it was just a little hole in the wall, but it was in the downtown area of Santa Barbara, and in the morning I'd see people driving by and stuff, or going to work and all that, and I'd be like, why aren't they drinking? You know, what are they doing? They're drinking this or this over there. Anyhow, so I had the power to not drink for a week. and I saw her next week, and we talked about alcoholism, and she gave me a book to read called Under the Influence. And Under the Influence was written in the 1970s, and it was based on science, where the doctor's opinion was based on the doctor's best guess, on his observations, everything he saw indicated it's an allergy, but then Under the Influence, and that was before I even read doctor's opinion, but Under the Influence, it talks about physiology, that it's just plain different. Some people have it and some people don't, and that's how it is. And so she had given me that book. When I saw her the second time I saw her, now I'm a week sober, and she gives me the book to read. No, we talked about alcoholism, and then she gives me the book to read and says, will you see me next week? Read this book and don't drink till you see me. And I said, yes. So anyhow, I saw her the third time, now I'm 2 weeks sober, and I read that book and I identified. I have a physiology if I had a drink of cravings when it kicked in. And my brother-in-law, George, who's, I have 17 brother-in-laws, had 8 sisters, so figure that one out. And my brother-in-law, George, invited me to my first meeting. It was a Tuesday night in Santa Barbara, the Episcopal Church on Mr. Train and State Street. And I was so welcome. George, at that time, was probably 18 years sober. He was an icon, like I am now, or whatever. I mean, it's weird, you know. It's part of, you know, part of what we really bring to life, and part of what other people think you bring to life, and they emulate what they think as well as what you do. I'm not as good as some people think, but I do try to see less than I can. Anyhow. But anyhow, so my brother-in-law was an icon at the end of the day. And so everybody was totally welcoming me. Nobody gave me a phone number, just assumed that George's brother, and my brother-in-law, George, I hate to say that, I'm recording this, but I didn't trust him to not be gossiping among my sisters about me and my story and stuff. And so I didn't, he would have been a natural to be my sponsor, except that I didn't trust that, that what I would share with him would be between me and him. And it could be he was totally trustworthy, it was just where I was at. But nevertheless, and also because of my brain damage being spaced out and all that kind of stuff, and also because I wasn't desperate to be sober. I was sober. You know, I was willing to be sober. I wasn't desperate to be sober until after 10 years of sobriety, and I was the chair of the convention in Santa Barbara, and after dealing with all the people on the committee and all the different things that came up, I was like desperate to be sober. But anyhow, whatever. But anyhow, the point is, I got the men's stag. I knew these people knew how to stay sober. And if you're in this room, you know we know how to stay sober. I'm not sure what time I started, but I followed up on him by 8 o'clock. Is that 45 minutes? Okay. Anyhow, so let's see here. Yeah, it's like, I hope, you know, each of you here can take a little bite of what I'm serving up. So meetings are speaker meetings and discussion meetings. And at discussion meetings, it's like a potluck. We're each serving up. And we take what we don't want and leave the rest. And if we get called on to share, we serve up whenever we can. And as a speaker tonight, I'm serving the main course. And I realized, I don't know, sometimes it's fun. I can't imagine through my ears, it might be kind of hard to listen to just because there's so much space in between this and that. But it's come as you are, and I am come as I am. And it's like, where I started to go with the anyone in the room who would not identify as a real alcoholic to really dial you into the first division up there. The only requirement for membership is because I had to stop thinking. If I have a drink and cravings going to kick in, I want to be a member. I'm a member of St. Adam. I was joking with someone recently about, I was showing them the contract after the meeting, and it was like, drink your slip, check, and we bought it, and it was like, they took it back right away, because it was like, you know, whatever. Okay, so, 4 months later, I was railroaded to be the secretary. 3 years later, I'm walking through the Alana Club, and Tim W. is sitting there around a big long table, and they're in the convention committee meeting, and said, hey, Billy, come on, let's sit down, and next thing I knew, I was making coffee, and or serving coffee at the convention. The next year I was co-chair for hospitality. A week before that convention, it's a pretty big convention, a week before the convention, the hospitality chair resigned, and they had not shared anything with me, and I winged it, being hospitality chair for the Santa Barbara convention. And then the next year I was co-treasurer, and then treasurer, and then co-chair, and then chair. And saying yes, and along the way, like I answered the phone at central office, I took a commitment for 4 hours once a week to answer the phone. And there was a guy walking in and out, and he was bald, and he was tearing his hair off, and he was the treasurer, and he was the treasurer for like 3 years, and nobody associated with central office would step up to do it, and I was new to the whole deal, and God said, Bill, you can do that, so I said, I can do that. And next thing you know, he has the treasurer report. This is in like 1990, 91, he has it in Excel on a computer. And I'm 40 or 41 years old at that time, and I thought computers were for people who couldn't figure things out in their head. You know, I could figure it out in my head. You know, I cut back hangers of leather and sewed stickers on them and sold the arts and craft show and, you know, and so on. And anyhow, it was humbling and it was door opening, and my sponsor had a computer, so I got the commitment. I used my sponsor's computer for a month or two, then I got a computer. And now when I reached tonight, and on that central office thing, it's like a spreadsheet and you know, like information, like who donated, how much money, where did it go, what the expenses are, you know, just, you know, columns and rows of information, okay? So now when I go back to the warehouse tonight, I'm dealing with a spreadsheet that has 667 rows of products and 50 rows of possible information, but I only deal with, or columns of information, I only deal with about 20 or 25 columns of information. Anyhow, my point on that is saying yes to life, you know, saying yes to sobriety, saying yes to what your higher power offers up to you, what your higher power puts in front of you, you know, say yes to it, you know, as best you can. My first sponsor I got was, I asked him when I was 6 months sober, and I asked him, he had 4 years sobriety, and I thought he needed something to do. And so I asked him to be my sponsor. He probably went out with a woman from her sobriety house, who probably went out on heroin, they probably moved in together. And I was so spaced out, I had to think about it for half an hour just to think of something to call my sponsor about. And finally I had to think of something, and I called my sponsor, because people always talk about calling a sponsor, and I call him, and he'd be weighing on my shoulders about his relationship. And then he would he'd say, so what's up? And by that time I told him about why I called him. I said, well, I'm going to this meeting tonight or whatever, and that was that. And after a year, I'm 18 months sober, and I tell you, I quit smoking as an amendment to myself, and 9 months sober, I gained 50 pounds because I had a smoking meeting at the Wellness Club in Santa Barbara, and I caught a nicotine fit. And those of you that smoke and quit, a nicotine fit can be pretty hard. And I can only think of like a couple of things to do. One was suicide. One was jump off the San Marcos Pass Bridge. One was to smoke, which I really didn't want to do, and the other choice was to drink. And then in my mind's eye, I could see on the coffee table a bottle of Jack Daniels. So I'm looking at suicide or drinking or smoking. And I really didn't want to smoke, okay? I'd done the third step, but I hadn't proceeded in the steps. So anyhow, at that point, 18 months over, my higher power made it clear, Billy, you need another sponsor, different sponsor, and the right guy popped into mind, and go to the store and get a pack of comic strips. Okay, so no alcohol, no suicide tonight. We're going to get some more cigarettes. So I only got a pack of comic strips, and the next morning I called my sponsor, and I thanked him for being willing to help me, and I got this other guy to sponsor me, and he was my sponsor for the next 10 or 11 years. And at one point at the end, now I'm getting too much detail. Tonight, because I'm my sponsor, and anything that I need to share or have, I can share anything with you. And sometimes I need direction or comment or whatever, and her viewpoint always fills the gap for me. So, now I want to get into the metaphors. Now, people new to AA can probably absorb these. People that have been around it definitely can. And, so the first one is really brief, is just that life is a potluck banquet. I experienced life as a potluck banquet every day. And we're all invited. And the point is to bring to the banquet what you have to bring to the banquet, what life gives you to bring. Bring a hello to somebody, bring respect to someone, bring your best health just to the fresh air and so on. So we're all invited. The point is to bring what you have to bring. And there's one seat at the banquet. And the seat is in the heart of our Creator. Okay? Now another one, I'm going to use the J word. This guy was not Junior Silver. He had a sense I identified Christian to some extent. And I grew up with that background. I don't go to church. I don't, I read the Bible sometimes. I'll probably share one thing I read in the Bible that was very important to me. But it doesn't matter where you read it. It doesn't matter where you get it. When life gives you something that's meaningful, absorb it. Take it in. So, so this guy says to me, so, Billy, do you believe Jesus did miracles? And I was 8 years sober, this word only in the 11th step on the board over there. It says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as a student, praying only to knowledge of His will for us and how to carry that out. And I was 8 years sober when I saw that, so I've been praying that. And when I'm praying for knowledge of God's will and how to carry it out, then I will experience it like His inspiration. And anyhow, so this guy says to believe Jesus through miracles, and I'm like, like, you mean walking on water? He said, yeah, do you believe Jesus walked on water? I said, well, I believe Jesus walked wherever He needed to walk. And I don't know if He needed to walk on water, but if He did need to walk on water, then yes, I believe He walked on water. But it is not relevant if He walked on water. What matters is He walked where He needed to walk. Okay? And the point of that is for us as alcoholics to be sober is no less a miracle than walking on water. There's people in the program, you'll hear them say, we don't walk on water. I walk on water every day. Okay? Walk on water. I mean, we're alcoholics. Be sober. Do what it takes to be sober. Work the steps. No less a miracle than walking on water. So, that's another one. Then, another one, the Bear Branch Tree. Okay? Some of you have heard it. Some of you have heard it many times. And, but it's worth sharing. I was at a meeting and there was a woman that was a newcomer. She wasn't a newcomer when she shared this, but she shared it that when she was a newcomer, the room where she lived in, outside the window of her room, there was a tree and it was dead. And it was really sad, this poor dead tree. And time passed and this tree sprouted leaves. And it was such a joy to her that it was alive. And the tree, time passed and the tree sprouted blossoms. And that was such a joy to her. It's so beautiful. And time passed and it sprouted plums. And it was like it was a plum tree and she didn't know anything about trees in the first place. And it was just totally a joy to her. And I took that as a metaphor. Probably because of my brain damage or whatever. When I wake up in the morning, I'm like a bare branch tree. And I get on my knees and I say my prayers, starting with thank you and somewhere in there, please give me the knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry it out. And then I read things. There's three different things I read to get my head going in the right direction. And that is like sprouting leaves. It's like I get up, I get going, and I'm saying yes to life. I'm going to show up today. And that's sprouting leaves. And then I'll have an insight about the day. And it could be brush your teeth. It could be eat right. It could be go for a walk around the block. It could be make that phone call. It could be get to work on time. Although for me, work on time is... Anyhow, that's another story. But anyhow, the point being is that when we have insights or we run into someone we haven't seen, we have an opportunity to treat them like a person, like a human being, to treat them with respect. It's an opportunity that's a blossom, and when we bring it, that's bearing fruit. So it used to be that just at the end of the day, and I'd be beating myself up, I'm a little depressed, a little tired, because in my life there's always more to handle, and not that my life is exceptional over anyone else in the room, but there's always more to handle. And when I get to the end of the day and I'm a little depressed, a little tired, I used to beat myself up. And God took me aside one day and said, Billy, when you get to the end of the day and you're a bare branch tree and you fossilize everything I gave you to bring to life today, don't beat yourself up. Do yourself 15 starts. It's perfectly fine to be a little depressed and tired and get some sleep and get ready to do it all over again. And that's, to me, we're all... We fit that metaphor. We're all right now. Bear branch tree, got leaves, berry blossoms, if you're paying attention or not paying attention, or whatever, it's none of my business. But we are all in that cycle, bearing fruit. And that's what life offers, to bear fruit. The stuff that I was bearing in my drinking days was an empty resolution, I'm not drinking today. And then, oh no, not again. Oh, you have 4 more times. Time for the water metaphor. Anybody freak out because you don't understand God? Okay. I'll help you with that. This, we call it water, right? But what it is really is molecules of hydrogen and oxygen. But what those really are is atoms of electrons and protons and neutrons. And electrons are primary particles, but protons and neutrons are made of subatomic particles. I don't know what they are, gluons, or I don't know, you know, some people in the room might know, I don't mean to interrupt and explain it, but there's really tiny particles, just on really tiny particles. Then there's electromagnetic fields, because if there's just all tiny particles, everything would be just one big blob of tiny particles, right? But it's electromagnetic fields and gravity and other properties that make things come together to exist, like my phone, these books, you, me, the room, the water. Okay. There are people that have PhDs in hydrology, and there's 2 other subjects of where you get a PhD in water. I looked it up one time. Okay. Now my point is, if I had to understand water, to drink water, I'm out of luck. I'm going to die of dehydration. Okay? I hydrate myself. I don't need to understand it. Now, if I don't understand water, it's absurd on its face that I would understand God. Okay? We can have some understanding. But the idea that how many PhDs are there on God, it's just studying God, you know? We don't understand God. If God is to understand God, I've come to understand infinite, eternal, and love, you know? Those are properties, those are in my, the world I live in, the way I see it, the way I experience it. But the idea I understand God, no, no. That brings me to one of my favorite prayers, which is, God, please reveal yourself to me as you exist for me. Okay? It's God's business to show me God. It's my business to pay attention. Okay? So, a momentary space on what's next. Okay, 2 things came up. One is, given that, and I'm not lecturing theology or anything, I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And about experience, strength, and hope, everyone in this room has experience. Okay? And all of us have had that experience. And most of us have some level of hope. And a lot of us have some level of strength, even the littlest bit of strength. And thus we grow, and so can you. Quote, that wasn't me. which brings me to one of my favorite lines in the big book, which is, the point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. It's really simple. It's not like we're willing to believe the way Billy believes, the way Robert believes, the way Mike believes. No. We're willing to came to believe. Before I believed, after I did my first step, I came to believe the people in this room believed. And then I came to believe it could be true for me. And that was the opening of believing. And once I came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, then it was a small step to turn my will and my life over to care of that power. So, given my sense that my higher power is infinite, eternal, and love, I can pause, like the big book says, pause with agitators. I can pause and be in the presence of infinite, eternal love. Because logically, I know infinite means everywhere, eternal means always, like right now. And love is a huge part of basic nature. Of the higher power, my higher power, then that's the nature of reality right here, right now. The nature of reality at the core is the presence of infinite eternal love. And that's the opportunity that awaits each of us. What gets in the way of that, for me, like last Wednesday, I pounded a whole quart and a half of ice cream in an hour. And when I do that, I'm on a downward spiral, very slow, but downward, for about 3 days. And I'm really glad I didn't meet him on Friday, because he'd have a different speaker tonight, even if it was me standing here. But anyhow, so I did that. I experienced that. And I know it to be true. I don't always feel it, but I know it's true. Okay, now this one is really good, and I'm glad we kind of built up to it, because I'm sure most of you have seen some of the James Webb telescope photos, and you've certainly seen Hubble photos, okay? So you know that if I'm pointing there and I say, I'm pointing at a star, you know I'm probably true. And I'm pointing at a star, there's one over my shoulder there, there's one right between my eyes, about 10 light years that way, you know, okay? Now to extrapolate that, we are sitting here in the 1600 Club, 324 West Cypress in San Maria, California, USA, North America, Earth, solar system in the Milky Way. And if we got everything, like in the mind's eye, anything within 20,000 miles of where I'm standing right now, and I see everything beyond that, it's unspeakably beautiful. This place where we really are, where our vantage point is here in this room tonight, right here, right now. But the reality where we really are, we're in the universe. We're in this unspeakably beautiful place, never mind theology. Just mind the space telescope and then figure it out, or not figure it out, say that prayer, God, please reveal yourself to me as you exist for me. I'm going to briefly go back to water, which is just this. I love to drink, but I'm an alcoholic, and I don't like the consequences. So I'll go there. But there's nothing wrong with drinking. Okay. Now, one more metaphor and then one more thing. I might go 2 minutes over if you want me to, but I will wrap it up. So there was 10 of us. My brother, my baby brother is 65, and on June 3rd, our oldest sister died. She was 81. She'd had a stroke 2 years earlier. She was bedridden. It was time for her to die. And historically, there was 4 previous family members, either in-laws or a niece, a mom and dad, and a sister-in-law. I made 16-page booklets for them. And this is because I volunteered to answer the phone at central office, right? I could do a computer like this and tell this story. My sister was like 3.5 years old when her first sister came along. She was like an only child for the longest time, okay? And in doing this booklet, you wind up with a file called a PDF and give it to the printer. And I gave it to the printer. And now on my way home, I thought I was going to give me a proof the next morning. On the way home, I figured I need to do a couple things on this. So I emailed them that night, sent them a different PDF, so I'll be over in the morning. And they had 2 proofs ready for me. And I said, yeah, I'll print the second PDF. It was $600, and I got it, and I looked at it that night, and I totally left out one of my sister's stories. And so I had to do a third PDF. I called him, I said, I need a really good deal on a reprint, 100 more copies, and they gave me a good deal. And so then I submitted another PDF with my sister's story, and I got a mutant story in there too, and I rearranged the pictures. This is about like 500 pictures, and figure out which picture goes in here. And you're like, this picture belongs on the front, okay? This one with her looking back at us, that totally belonged on the back. The other stuff is all just siphoning it up, understanding it belongs, it doesn't belong, it belongs, it doesn't belong. Where does it belong? It belongs there, it belongs there, okay? So I got the third PDF printed, and the printer, God bless them, they misprinted, and half of the page number was missing. And I had to contact them. And anyhow, to make a long story short, I made 5 of these, and each time, 5 different editions. And each time I went through it with this fine-tooth comb. and making sure what belongs in the book is there and so on. And as it happened, with this one, the final edition, there's a typo in there. And after the hearing, I'm looking at it, I see this one typo, I mean, been over and over. My point of this metaphor is really powerful, and then there's one last thing I want to share that takes a couple minutes. I built up this inner architecture of working on the book for 10 days. This belongs, this doesn't belong, this belongs, this doesn't belong. And a lot of people appreciate this metaphor, because my day is about that. Being here tonight, today, with you, sharing is part of my booklet for today. Okay? There's something came up in the course, you know, business wise or whatever, and that needs to be handled, but it's not in today's booklet. So to size things up choice by choice throughout the day, something comes into mind, oh my gosh. Put one, is it a problem or a solution? Well, nothing to do with that. Okay, it's not a problem. Okay, are we done with it? It's not done. Nothing to do about it in today's booklet. It's saying focus on the booklet, what belongs in the booklet, what belongs in the day, what you're invited to bring to life in the day, really liberates my judgment to be able to make clear, concise understanding it belongs or doesn't belong, and so on. Okay, now that, I just want to get briefly to Dr. Bob, the good old timer. I'm a Dr. Bob AA member. At the time that he died in 1950, the last thing he said to Bill W. was, remember, though, keep it simple, don't muck it up, okay? And there's a talking here of what he, I'm gonna go ahead and read it, it's really quick. The right before the talk, Okay, there's a short talk. Most people remember his advice on simplicity and quite often cite this to emphasize at some point they themselves may be making, but Dr. Bob said a good deal more than that. As he himself said about the 12 steps, none of it needs interpretation. Okay, it's right up there. I mean, we do need a slight explanation, but yeah, as my good friends in AA, another AA, I feel I'd be very remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to welcome you here to Cleveland, not only to this meeting, but to those that have already transpired. I hope very much that the presence of so many people and the words that you have heard will prove an inspiration to you, not only to you, but may you be able to impart that inspiration to the boys and girls back home who were not fortunate enough to be able to come. In other words, we hope that your visit here has been both enjoyable and profitable. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all have the same problem, we all do the same things, we all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength hasn't returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. There are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it will be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the inner member of the tongue. If we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. Almost done. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or 3, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts in our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us. Thank you very much. Thank you for the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Governor.